Blog Talk Radio.
You're the light, you're the night, you're the color of my blood. You're the cure, you're the pain, you're the only thing I want to touch.
Welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that cultural issues really do shape and impact our world. So, join us as we discuss the hottest topics and the cultural issues of our day. Stay tuned.
Well, good evening and welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. At this time, we're going to have a special guest come into our online studio, and of course, our topic for our session today is same-sex marriage, celebrating LGBT marriage for all with K.M. Davis. Just to give you a brief kind of background about K.M. Davis, Davis and I spoke years ago in regards to the same topic and the progress and the things that we wanted to see happen within the gay rights movement, within marriage equality movement. And so it's only befitting that what happened last week in the Supreme Court decision of last week, that I would have her back on Cultural Conversations. We started this conversation years ago, and you know we have a point or a benchmark that was reached last week and that will carry on in the United States, in the history of the United States, actually, where within the 50 states, same-sex marriage is recognized just as any other marriage. And we're going to have K.M. Davis or Davis on the show just in a few minutes to kind of break that down and explain what does that actually mean. We've been seeing a lot on social media, back and forth, people siding, have their different sides, and some right in the middle. They don't know what to think. And so here at Cultural Conversations, we want to bring those topics to light. And we want to bring attitudes and opinions to light as well. But the paramount thing we want to do here at Cultural Conversation is bridge and be a tool for understanding. So join Cultural Conversations this evening as we get into an intimate interview with K.M. Davis. And Davis is the founder of Davis Law and Associates. She is a return guest here at Cultural Conversations and will enlighten and engage us on the subject of the Supreme Court ruling making same-sex marriage legal in now all 50 states in America. I want to know, in particular, what has that path to marriage equality has been, not only for the gay community, but also I want to break it down personally for her. I want to understand and know just a little bit about her personal journey and if she can share that with us. And so this is going to be a very intimate and interesting conversation, and thank you for joining and being my listening audience and guest as well. You're listening to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back with Davis, our special guest from Davis Law and Associates. Stay tuned. Well, welcome back and thank you for listening in to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. At this time, we have K.M. Davis in our online studio. And just to give you a brief background on Davis, she is a return guest here at Cultural Conversation. We started this conversation a couple of years ago talking about gay rights, What's the scene on the street? I mean, what's the scene in our society? And really wanting to explore more and know more. And especially from an ally's view, we also talked about allies at that time, but we have gotten a Supreme Court ruling making same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states here in America. And I'm excited about that as an ally, and I know she is excited as well. And so I welcome to our Cultural Conversation Studios, Davis. Davis, you are on the air live. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a while. As I said in my introduction, it has been a while, but look how timely. We come full circle now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the last time we spoke was it when Minnesota legalized same-sex marriage, which would have been just about 2 years ago.
Yes.
I think that might have been when it was.
Yes, because from that time, I always peep people's pictures on Facebook, I must say. You've gotten married, I think.
Yes, I got married last September to my partner.
Okay, great. And you have just a beautiful family. So, but we're going to get right into our questions for tonight, because there's been a lot of movement, of course, on social media and throughout on what does this mean for society. And so if you could give our listening audience a brief introduction of yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Sure. Yep. So as you said, I'm an attorney. I have a law firm. There are three attorneys that work there. We primarily work with small businesses and individuals and kind of do everything that they need. I have a son who is about to be 7, a stepson who is about to be 12. And my partner and I, as I said, just got married last year. And, it's been our kids are kind of at an age where they have a pretty good understanding of how things work. And so we had gotten engaged before same-sex marriages were legal in Minnesota, and the boys had asked us to wait to get married until it was actually legal, and not just kind of symbolic. So for us, it was something our family kind of watched closely.
Okay. And you know, a little later on, we're going to talk about, you know, that family dynamic, because now it's become a reality with the Supreme Court ruling that, yes, in all 50 states, it is legal. You have to sell the marriage license. I don't know what you went through to get a marriage license or what have you, but it is legal now. One of the questions that I have is the definition. For a lot of people, it is still an unknown territory, the definition of LGBT. Could you define it just as simple as you can for our listening audience?
Absolutely. Yeah, you hear kind of a lot of acronyms. Sometimes you hear LGBTA, sometimes you hear LGBTQ, sometimes there's more letters. Basically, the most common that you hear is LGBT, which stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. So that kind of includes people who, I think under the trans umbrella, you also have not just people who identify as transgender, but you sometimes have people who identify as gender nonconforming, or in some way they don't kind of line up with what society generally says, this is what someone of your gender, should look like or do or enjoy. So, you know, this decision really primarily affected kind of those first three letters, lesbians, gays, and bisexuals, and allowed them to marry someone regardless of what the other person's gender is. In some ways, in smaller ways, I think it affects folks who identify as trans, because depending upon what the laws are in their state or what, if any, you know, medical procedures they've undertaken, their documentation, you know, their birth certificate, their license, may, you know, the gender marker on those may be, you know, they may be a fully presenting male person, but their gender marker because of where they live or what they have or haven't done may not be able to be changed. So in that way, it does somewhat affect folks that kind of fall under the trans umbrella of the acronym.
Yeah, and you know, for the trans community, or I'm gonna I stand here as someone who's in some part ignorant about the community, but I think they have been getting a lot of press lately, whether it's you know through a common a popularity kind of what I'm gonna say television entertainment press. But they have been getting a lot of press in the trans sector of the community.
Yes.
So this kind of ruling, getting back to the Supreme Court ruling, was it any surprise to you, or did the gay community, and I always say gay community, which I mean encompassing LGBT community, were they surprised at this ruling as everyone else was?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think in some ways, I mean, I used to work for the ACLU, so I have spent a lot of time in my time through law school paying attention to what the Supreme Court's doing. Monday of last week, the Supreme Court refused, they just refused to hear an issue, or I can't even remember now the details of it, but basically they kind of tipped their hand as to what the outcome of this decision was likely to be, because they basically refused to hear something, because in addition to the opinions that the Supreme Court puts out, they also kind of, you know, do some humdrum, like, we'll hear this case, we won't. On Monday, there was an article that kind of only legal nerds would really read, that said, we think that this kind of, you know, tipped their hand, and they're going to rule that same-sex marriage must be allowed, that you can't discriminate in these few states that are left where they did. But I still think it was, so in some ways I think that activists and people who had worked on this issue thought this was the way it would go. You know, this was kind of how popular opinion was moving, this was the way. But I still think that there was, when it happened, kind of a fair amount of shock that, you know, wow, this actually did happen. And there was also, I think, a pleasant surprise about how the decision was made, because, you know, the Supreme Court can kind of, they get a case when a circuit court in one place, in this instance, it was kind of the circuit that encompasses Mississippi and some of those states there, says one thing and other circuit courts say another thing. So in this case, it was some federal courts had said, no, a state can't tell the gay citizens of its state that they can't get married, or cannot tell gay citizens of its state who got married somewhere else that their marriage isn't recognized. And then you had this one circuit that said, no, they can. And so that's kind of how the Supreme Court gets the issue. I think a lot of people were surprised that the decision kind of very clearly stated that, you know, this is a violation of the Constitution. The, you know, society has changed. These are our neighbors. These are our, you know, friends. They raise their children alongside us. It's time that, you know, we're going to make this decision based on kind of the 14th Amendment and due process.
Yeah, it actually swept, I'm going to say a large segment of the population off their feet. And so you got this fury of one, celebration, and one, not understanding where did this come from. But
yeah, yeah.
In the end, yeah, I don't know if you felt the fury, but it was this kind of shock and confusion. But this is something that, just like you said, we've been working on this for years, and longer than that. You know, longer than what you and I have been talking about, but this has been in the making for many, 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 many years, where we can look at human rights and look at civil rights and look at, you know, how we do justice. And so how did, you know, getting back to the LGBT community, when they received the news, was it a grand celebration? You know, it coincided with Pride.
Yep.
And so I know Pride was so crowded, this year in Minneapolis in particular, but what special celebrations took place because of this ruling?
Yeah, I mean, there were, it's interesting because I feel like the LGBT organizations in a lot of major cities and probably in a lot of smaller places too had planned, they knew this decision was coming down. You get to the end of, here at the end of June, that's the end of the Supreme Court session. They issued some decisions today. I think they might issue some tomorrow, and then they leave. Then they're done for the summer. And so they knew the decision. They always save the big ones, the big things they've heard, till the end, till right at the end. So they knew there was a kind of a two-week period where this decision would be coming out at some point. So many places had planned, you know, when and if this decision comes out, we will, you know, we will have a, some sort of celebration. Like you said, it coincided with a lot of cities' pride celebrations because the last weekend in June is when the first, quote-unquote, pride took place in New York when there was an actual, you know, a raid on a gay bar there. And the folks who were there, many of whom were trans women, many of whom were drag queens, just decided we're not going to deal with this anymore. And they, there was, you know, a three-day riot where they just said, you're not going to come into our bars and arrest us and treat us like criminals. And so that's why Pride happens in a lot of major cities the last weekend of June. What really kind of lined up nicely was that this decision came out Friday and Pride weekend kind of started Friday. So I feel like the decision came out at 10 a.m. and, you know, most LGBT folks that I know, that was kind of the kickoff of their Pride weekend. I mean, it was, you know, it definitely was kind of a celebratory thing. The Family Equality Council, the folks who are here, that's an organization that works to protect the rights of LGBT parents. They decided to have kind of a gathering for families and their kids in a park here in New York. I mean, people kind of flooded the streets outside Stonewall, and they just had, I mean, a massive celebration there. And it really was interesting because it, for me, my experience, I mean, I live in Minneapolis. I feel like this is one of the most progressive places to be. I feel like some of the straight folks I know, you know, work on these issues and sometimes seem to care more about them than even I do. But they were just so, they just seemed so relieved. And I feel like maybe if you weren't, you know, we folks in the LGBT community knew this issue was coming down. We, you know, I follow the Supreme Court. I knew this was coming. But I feel like a lot of straight allies kind of were just so, I mean, I feel like it kind of lifted a weight off of their shoulders. You know, they walked around thinking like, gosh, I'm so embarrassed to be, to have this ability and to have friends who, you know, have raised families and have long-term relationships who don't have this ability. I feel like for allies, it seemed to be even, you know, just as exciting because so many of them had kind of gotten involved in this movement. And this was maybe for some of them the first civil rights movement that they ever were a part of. You know, this was the first thing that they really felt and understood and voted about and worked on. And this was kind of the culmination of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you're absolutely right in noting that, you know, for allies, for a lot of allies, it was a celebration. It was almost as if we had received the Supreme Court endorsement. It was like, you know, my page was just like blowing up, and I was like, you know, people yep. wonder, well, Verona, is it you? Or, you know, no, but I have so many people that I'm connected with, and, you know, I don't even want to say, oh, I have, you know, this number of friends yep. that are gay or lesbian. It doesn't, I can't count because a lot of people don't right. self disclose or what have you, but, you know, you want people to have equality regardless, you know, and if they're about loving, if you're about loving, I'm going to endorse you because you're about loving. Because we endorse so much foolishness that has to do with hate. But, you know, if you're about loving, if you're about adopting kids that don't have a home, that need a home, or you're about, you know, making a family unit,
mm-hmm.
all the better. You know, you're not hurting me, all the better. But, Divis, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the obstacles that have prevented us. I know you talked about Stonewall. We're going to talk about some of the obstacles that we have in a lot of communities where people want to come out and they just can't, they can't make it, they can't come out. So we're going to talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to Cultural Conversations right here with your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. We've had a cultural conversation with K.M. Davis, or Davis, as I like to call her, and sometimes she calls herself Davis. Davis is the founder of Davis Law & Associates right here in Minneapolis. She is a return special guest. A couple of years ago, we talked about the LGBT community and the allies and what would be needed moving forward here in Minnesota with legalization of marriage and marriage equality. So we're happy that we can have her as a repeat guest here on Cultural Conversation as we talk about the Supreme Court ruling just recently that makes same-sex marriage legal in all 50 states here in America. And I want to know, as our listening audience probably want to know as well, what has been the path to marriage equality. So we're going to be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Cultural Conversations with your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Today on Cultural Conversations, we're having a cultural conversation in regards to same-sex marriage, celebrating LGBT, marriage for all, with someone who is of that intimate community. So I love to get it from the horse's mouth, per se. And just celebrating the Supreme Court ruling on same-sex marriage, which is making same-sex marriage equality a reality for all 50 states here in America, and kind of getting some historical information and feedback on what was it like to hear that from a person that's in, who's living the life and living a life within the gay community. And if I keep saying gay community, Davis, please correct me if that's not the correct term. I was saying in one of my classes, I was saying transgendered with an ED, and someone corrected me and said, no, it's just transgender. I said, well, thank you. So we're learning as we're developing and moving on. No one knows everything. You know, even for allies, we don't know. But what has been some of the obstacles to this path for marriage equality? You talked about the beginning, which was Stonewall in New York. What has been some of the obstacles there?
Yeah, I think the biggest, looking back on how quickly things have changed in the past, but I think it's 12 years since Massachusetts first said, we will allow, you know, this watershed moment when they said, we're going to vote, our legislature is going to vote to allow same-sex marriage here, and everyone thought the sky would fall. And when Mitt Romney was the governor of Massachusetts, I think the biggest obstacle that we don't have anymore is kind of, and we still have it a little, but it's certainly much more easily kind of wiped away with modern technology, is kind of fear and ignorance. And ignorance in the state, in the true meaning of the word, as in, I don't know anything about that. So I think that, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was really easy to just live your life with people that look like you and people that are like you, you know, to go to your work, to come home, to read the newspaper, maybe, to watch the news, maybe. But I think nowadays, and particularly in the past, you know, 10 to 12 years, when Massachusetts became the first state to say, our legislature is going to legalize same-sex marriage, the rest of us could hear about it and could see it because we had access to the internet, because we had, you know, 24-hour news cycles, because we had these things. And I think that is a lot of what helped. And I think also the strategy that LGBT activists took in, you know, they used to run these big campaigns. And, you know, the first time President Obama was elected, that same day Proposition 8 was upheld in California. So that state said, no, we're not going to allow same-sex marriages. So we really have come a long way in a really short time. But I think the obstacles that they overcame were they just got families and people out there to talk to their neighbors and to kind of remove that fear and to remove that ignorance, because it's very easy to say, I'm afraid of something that's different than me and I don't like it and I'm not okay with it and it's bad. It's so much harder to say that when you actually know a person. And so I think that's a huge, you know, having the internet, having, you know, gay people on television, having celebrities come out, having states start to allow this and realizing, oh, you know, the sky's actually not falling down. I think that that's kind of what changed people's minds. And I think in some of the states where there's still a lot of opposition, I think it is still a scary, hostile place for people to come out. And, you know, they can still lose their job. They can lose their housing. Those protections aren't in place. So I think it doesn't surprise me that in a lot of those states, probably really scary to be out, that you still have a lot of people who, you know, are ignorant of the facts, don't know that they know someone who, you know, people in places where you may not be able to keep your children if you came out. You know, that's going to really deter people. And then I think the other part of it is, I think conservatives kind of glommed onto this as one of their really powerful kind of lightning rod fear dividing tactics with people. And I think it worked for a long time. I think to, you know, other the GLBT community and to say, like, you don't want this here, you don't, I think that worked and they kept people fearful. But I think that's kind of slowly being removed, because I think as people see more people coming out and realize that, you know, they know people who are gay and there isn't that much of a difference, I think that's what's helping.
Yeah, you know, it's ironic that you say, you know, in certain circles, and I don't want to just say, you know, conservative circles or what have you, just certain circles, some people, you know, they even consider themselves as being traditionally or fundamentally, you know, conservative. But they know that they are ignorant of the fact, and I'm glad that you define ignorant. It means just the unknowing or not knowing, not having enough information to even draw a conclusion, just ignorant of that. And I think in certain communities, it is not acceptable based on that ignorance or based on what someone else have told them or based on their traditions or based on things that they've learned in a in a kind of constructive organization such as the church, based on a messages received. But I often think of myself as growing up in one of those conservative bubbles, I'm going to say, mm-hmm. without the title of being conservative. That's funny, because I wouldn't even be accepted in what is this traditional conservative. they'll run us out of there, you know.
Yep.
What, you African-American female? What, you think you're conservative? But I was raised in a Bible preaching, teaching community. And one of the first things that you know is that they have a role. There's Adam and Eve, and there's a role that each person play. And from a very little girl, you are raised to be a girl. You're raised to be a woman. And there's, even if you have an inkling or something that's not you, some physically, some emotionally and mentally, because of the community that you are raised in or the community that you're affiliated with. How often did I see people who were obviously, I'm going to say, you're obviously yep. gay, dude. You are in my church. You're obviously gay. And then, you know, hearing this anti-gay message, but this person is obviously, you're obviously gay. You're obviously hitting on a lot of people because, you know, a lot of men, or if you're same sex, mm-hmm. that is coming out as it should, because that's what people do when they're attracted to other people. And
right.
it's good to step back and reckon with that. Are we living a lie? And I look at a lot of college students, and I don't want to just say college students, but I want to say adolescents that are emerging into their own sexuality, whatever that means. And they struggle with that portion, because you want to continue to kind of live what you were taught as mm-hmm. as right. You don't want to go to hell, because you've been listening, you're going to go to hell if you declare that you're this. But if you don't, you're living a lie. So could you talk about how you successfully, you know, it probably wasn't an easy path, I don't know, but how did you successfully, you know, get over that hump?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, I went to Catholic school all the way through high school. So, you know, we had a lot of the same issues. It. I mean, I feel almost lucky in that I feel like when I went to Catholic school, the Catholic Church hadn't yet, like, decided it was going to kind of really adopt these political causes. I mean, now I look and, you know, they're teaching little tiny children about, yeah, like, it's not okay to be gay and no one should ever, you know, be pro-choice and all these things. And it wasn't that explicit to us when we were in school, but you just didn't have any examples. There was no one that was an example of, like, a successful person living, you know, an out life. So, you know, it wasn't until I went to college and kind of got exposed to things that were outside my, you know, because we didn't have the internet. We didn't really have a 24-hour news cycle where you could see people who were different than you. So I went to college and finally, you know, started realizing that there were people who were very successful and leading very happy lives and were also out. And so, I mean, I remember my father was, you know, kind of a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. He would have identified himself as a liberal. You know, he as liberal as you could be in kind of working class Pittsburgh. But he, you know, when I came out, the only concern he had was, he said, I just feel like your life is going to be more hard now than it would have been. You know, I just don't want, you're my only child and I don't want you to struggle at all like any parent does. And I feel like now your life is going to be tougher. But you pointed out a really good thing, where your life is really tough if you can't be who you are. So
right.
I think that, again, you know, we see more of the world now. And we can see that, you know, it kills people to not be able to be who they are. And
right.
and so, and I think, you know, one of, you know, as we, you know, I probably came out, let's say I was, you know, probably 18 years ago. And it was, yeah, it still was kind of a difficult thing. But my kids now, you know, they just, they don't really even care. I mean, they don't even understand. Like, we take our kids to Pride, and they're just kind of like, well, what's the big deal? You know, like, oh, great. Some of these people are gay. Some of these people are trans. Wonderful. Because it's not, you know, they just don't even, it's just a part of history for them. Like, this is just how people are made. And so I just think it's with more, you know, it became easier for me as I saw me reflected more, you know, in common culture and in the media and started seeing. And sometimes you don't even realize, I think, how it feels to have, you know, to have these laws. Like, I'm fine. I live in Minnesota. The federal government a few years ago said, hey, we're going to recognize you. So, you know, we filed our taxes jointly, and we know that if one something happens to one of us, the other one will be fine. But you don't realize even how it affects you to even living somewhere where you're totally safe and totally kind of equal in the eyes of your state until you do have a decision come down and you do have Supreme Court justices kind of say, you know, these people, you know, your people are just as good as everyone else. It's really powerful. And I think now, you know, that decision kind of feels like the biggest boulder to kind of come out of the way to allow kids and to allow people who have been kind of living not their truth to be able to say, oh, my goodness, you know, what's stopping me now? And I think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's, as you mentioned before, people need to live their truth and they need to live in their truth. And the danger of really for communities and communities of color, I'm going to say, is not living that truth and spreading a lie within, you know, within your household, within your marriage, within your intimate setting. No one wants that heard. You know, I would rather have someone just be straight up. You tell me you're gay. I probably can already feel that you're gay, but tell me you're gay and we can deal with it from there. There's all different types of relationship bonds that people have and that people explore. So it's not the end of the world that this is happening.
Right.
But in some social settings, it's going to take time. But for society as a whole, for equality, you know, I think this is in the right step. Now, Davis, we have a caller that's online. I want to get this caller in.
Sure.
I actually know S&M, so I'm going to get him on the line right now. You're on the line with Cultural Conversations. Speak up.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay. I'm listening. Yes, I'm listening to the conversation, and, you know, and I'm learning a lot. You know, this is a very good conversation. First thing, I would say that, you know, I'm just going to say this. I mean, ignorant, because when you admit that you are ignorant about a subject, you know, you give yourself a chance to know something, you know. So, you know, I'm just, you know, my upbringing, you know, being gay is totally unacceptable. But when I came to America, you know, this is a free country. Everybody, you know, is free to do whatever you want to do, live the life that you want to live. But this is what I want to say. I was listening to the radio one day, and I heard this case where somebody refused to serve pizza or cake to a gay couple. The gay couple test because, you know, they said it's a discrimination. I just want you to talk about, you know, I know that people say, you know, every time you are actually not for something because you are not for gay marriage because of your religious beliefs, people think that you are closed-minded and you are resistant to progress and all that, but I just want you to tell me, you know, if respecting, you know, my my religious beliefs is an obstacle to progress. For example, you know, like, open-mindedness, like, by accepting, you know, somebody, choice not to serve a cake to somebody because of, you know, their religious beliefs, isn't that a way of being open-minded? I don't know if I'm making myself clear. Can I repeat the question?
Sure. My
question is, if we talk about open-mindedness and we accept everybody, you know, I think people don't accept these days the fact that, you know what, I'm Christian and the Bible just tells me some mm-hmm. things are not okay. And, I'm okay with somebody living their life. You know, you have to love everybody. You have to be okay. But, you know, isn't it kind of close-minded to say that you are not, you know, you are not allowing me to celebrate my gay wedding at your place? Like, if you talk about acceptance, you accept everybody. Shouldn't the gay community also accept some of us who are very conservative and who just want to live our life our way, and we don't want to be an obstacle to anybody? I just want you to, you know, to talk a little bit, you know, about that case, you know, if possible.
Well, thank you, Ethanam. Davis, if you can respond.
Yeah, no, and I know what case you're talking about, and so that's an that's actually a really, you know, good segue into, so you have this decision that says gay marriage is legal in 50 states, but in, I think it's 37 maybe less than that, there still are a lot of protections that gay people don't have. So in many states, someone can marry their spouse and then go into work the next day and be fired because their boss literally says, I am firing you because I don't like gay people. Or someone can say, I'm not renting to you because I don't like gay people, because there's no federal protection other than marriage right now. You know, our civil rights statutes and other statutes and decisions basically protect folks from discrimination in housing or public accommodations, which are public accommodations are restaurants, you said, kind of any public business. They protect people. You know, you can't discriminate because someone's a woman. You can't discriminate because someone's a different ethnicity than you are. So you can't discriminate because of someone's color. You can't discriminate because of their religion or their national origin. But, you know, you in a lot of states, you can still discriminate because someone is gay. So, you know, there are a lot of states where that's okay. In Minnesota, it's not. Minnesota, since the 70s, has had a human rights statute that prohibits those discrimination. So if you want to run a business in Minnesota, you have to be willing to serve people regardless of what your opinions are. You know, that's if you want to have a business that you hold out to the public that avails itself mm-hmm. of, you know, the benefits of being a business in Minnesota. No church has to, you know, allow a same-sex marriage. No, you know, in many states you can say, I don't want to sell you a cake because, you know, it's a gay, it's for a gay wedding. I think that may change. I think that this decision on marriage will probably be what is used as precedent to someday obtain federal protection for gay people. But, you know, there's an alternate side that dubs itself a lot of these religious freedom acts that says the absolute opposite. So, like, right now in, I believe it's Texas, their attorney mm-hmm. general has said if you as a clerk or as a county official or a state official don't, you know, if your religion says that you cannot, you know, issue, you know, be any part of a gay marriage, the county clerks in Texas have been told by the attorney general that they are free to say, I can't help you, but somebody else can. So yeah. I think that's kind of an accommodation that you're seeing in some of these places where someone makes a very strong, you know, kind of protests and says, well, my religion won't let me do this. You know, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on what side you're on, in Minnesota, that's not the case. So if you want a job in government in Minnesota, or you want to have a business that's licensed or is open to the public, or then Minnesota for the past 50 years, you've had to, you've just had to be willing to do that. Now, you know, I think that most people, if they don't feel welcome at a place, they're probably not going to go, and they're probably not going to actually
right.
bring a lawsuit about it or file a complaint to the Human Rights Commissions. But they definitely, you know, in Minnesota particularly, you can't do it except in things that aren't open to the public. So,
public.
And
I think,
so things,
go ahead, finish your thought, Davis.
So things that are private, you know, so a church or your own home or the, you know, no one can kind of interfere with that. But public accommodations kind of have to be open to everyone.
I think that was the biggest, and that was the biggest kind of chatter that was being spoken about. One of the biggest was that, what does this actually mean for the rest of society? Do we have to accept gays? Do we have to, you know, it was all kind of things that were coming out, but it was built on that one word, built on ignorance and not knowing. If you have your own private shinding, if you have your own private gathering, no one is telling you what to do in your own private, you know, business, unless you're in Minnesota and you're serving the public and your business become public. So if your business
right.
is serving the public, it, you know, you have to conform to the rules and laws of that state. And so it is interesting that people will have to investigate and will have to do their research and become knowledgeable about the recognition of a community that has existed since the beginning of time. And so we already know that. One of the things, and it kind of just still is getting back to the community and looking at the community as a whole society. So we break our communities up, communities of color, feminist communities, you know, male communities. We break all of this up. But now we have a recognized community. What would you say to the other? And the other goes both ways. And how do we bridge a better understanding of each other?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think in a lot of ways, it kind of change and understanding of others kind of happens one-to-one. And, you know, that's the biggest, you know, the biggest change is made when, you know, someone, you know, when I am out and am myself and just kind of show up in the world and meet people who, you know, have all their different opinions and just, you know, meet them as a good person. And, you know, there's people are going to have their preconceived notions about all different communities, but I think that the biggest change kind of happens when people are just having conversations and are willing. And you know, I'm from the East Coast, and so living in the Midwest, this is sometimes really hard for people. Is you just have to, it's kind of two things. You have to be willing to meet people where they are, but you also have to be willing to tell them when where they are is not okay. So you have to be willing. I think you can't alienate people. You can't say, you know, I can't believe you feel that way. You know, you're a terrible person. You're a bigot. In some cases, that's how you feel because you're just like, I cannot believe this person is talking like this. But sometimes you just have to meet people where they are and you have to be willing to have a conversation and you have to be willing to say, you know, no matter what community we're talking about, you know, communities of color, women, you know, differently abled people, homeless people, different, you know, any marginalized community, when you're an ally of that community, you have to be willing to say, hey, you know, what's going on here? Why do you think this? This is not, you know, it's not okay. You have your opinions, but you're not going to have them around me, or you're not going to have them in my business or at my, you know, and I think it's, you have to meet people and you have to educate them about things, but you can't alienate them. So that's kind of, and it's really hard. I mean, it's hard for me when someone, you know, tries to say, oh gosh, you know, when somebody tries to say like, oh, it's not a big deal that this guy who walked into a black church and shot 9 people, that they took him into custody and got him a burger on the way, and that, you know, black men every day who haven't actually been charged or proven to do anything are killed when they're in custody. When someone says to me, like, that's not a racial issue, I want to say, you know, you want to kind of shake them and say, like, how can you be this dumb? But when you do that, then you just kind of alienate them. And so you have to kind of fight back that, you know, the tendency to want to kind of just let them have it. And you have to kind of say, okay, you know, let me meet you where you are and let me try to pull you along here. And let me kind of like be one of the people who actually stands up and tells you like, hey, this is why it's not okay with me. Or, you know, this is why. And I have to be willing to say to people like, hey, it's not okay with me if you say something like that because, you know, I'm gay and, you know, I'm married to someone and I don't see how it's affecting you at all. And
beautiful person. You're beautiful too. You're just beautiful. Beautiful spirit.
Yeah, so I think that's how we get there. I think you gotta just, I mean, it's gonna take work. And I think it's almost easier, you know, it's almost easier for allies to do the work because it's too hard when it's your act. Yeah. Sometimes it just hits too close to home and it's too hard to meet someone where they are when it's your community. But I think we all kind of, every different community has to realize that like all the struggles and the issues are kind of all wrapped up together.
So you mentioned as we end our segment here, you mentioned one key important group of people, and those are allies. As this decision came now, we celebrated too as allies. Now we go into the next phase of operation, I'm going to say, or strategy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you need from your community? What do you need allies to continue doing or to do?
I think just to realize that, you know, to take the time, I say, you know, right now it is okay for everyone who has been kind of a part of the struggle to take some time and to say like, wow, like to celebrate this victory. But I think also to realize that there are still so many people in the LGBT community, still so many places where, you know, someone, like we talked about, someone can get married but then still get fired. I think it's just important to realize that this was one step, but there are still so many more steps. And to be willing to say, okay, marriage was a really nice, you know, pretty thing that we could kind of put up here on a pedestal because that's how societally it is and kind of work for it, but to be willing to kind of work for the next things and to be willing to say, listen, you know, we've all got a lot to work for still and there's still a lot of injustice and we're not done, you know, by any means, mm-hmm. just because we've gotten this one thing done. But, you know, I think the work that allies have done to get us to where we have gotten in the past 12 years, I mean, that couldn't have been done just by our community alone. And so I think, and then I think for LGBT people, a lot of us, mm-hmm. kind of the for a lot of us who sit in like a nice position of privilege, like their struggle is pretty much over, you know, they've now got everything they need. But I think it's important for them to realize like, there's a lot of other folks out there who have a lot of struggles to do, and it's time for us to become allies to other communities.
Right. Other communities that are struggling as well for acceptance, for mm-hmm. even coming out, for recognition, for equality. And even within the gay community, there's so many splinters, you know, and I don't mean splinters as being something negative, but there's so many different communities.
Yep.
Where, you know, the privilege could actually assist and help and say, how do we bring a group of people along? And we're not trying to convert everybody, but we're just trying to assist and support the people who want to be or who are to be themselves. Davis, is, again, as we end
how can someone continue the conversation with you? I know you talked about your law firm, but if they want to continue this online conversation, where can they reach you?
Sure, they can. We have a Facebook page. It's just facebook.com/Davis Law Office. We have a Twitter, which is just @Davis Law Office. And they can always find us on our website, davismeansbusiness.com. And, yeah, I'm always happy to kind of have a conversation or answer questions or just be kind of, you know, available as a resource. So no one should hesitate to reach out.
Oh, that is wonderful. I want to thank you for coming on Cultural Conversations today. It's very important for me. From the moment that I met you, I knew this was going to be something special. You have charisma, lady. You really
well,
do.
So do you. Thank you.
Bring it home, and it's fantastic, and you're patient, and that's what we need. We need allies, and we need bridges to complete our understanding or to spur understanding so that we can make the world a better place to live for everybody.
Absolutely.
So thank you. Thank you very much for joining me tonight.
Thank you for having me. Absolutely.
All right.
Sitting in, sitting out on the edge of paradise. Every inch on your skin.
This is Verona Mitchell, and thank you for joining me on Cultural Conversations. At Cultural Conversations, we're bringing weekly cultural issues and topics to our online studio. Join me next week as we bring more of Cultural Conversations. Thank you for joining me. See you next week.